Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Dr. Ringenberg.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Good. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you great. Thanks.
Great. You bet.
First, again, I want to thank you for joining us. Your expertise in this arena is so important. So few Americans are appraised of this information. So I want to thank you and thank you for the work that you do to help people stay informed. What can you tell us about the latest? Oh, first, let me introduce you, Dr. Lynn Ringenberg, of the Physicians for Social Responsibility. Doctor, thank you for coming.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for asking me. And let me clarify a couple things. I'm a pediatrician here in Florida for over 35 years, and that's what got me interested in this. I'm also the president of Physicians for Social Responsibility in Florida and sit on the Health and Radiation Committee for National PSR. So, you know, I'm not an expert in all aspects of this. I look at more of the health issues.
Uh-huh.
But there's just so much that the American people aren't hearing, and it's very disturbing to me that we're not getting the information out to people.
Well, let me make this little comment. From listening closely to the wonderful symposium held through the Caldecott Fukushima symposium, one of the things that was mentioned is absent the public information, we must all become health physicists. So thank you for your work to get the news.
Well,
out.
I think we're going to have to. And, you know, that was a wonderful symposium. I actually couldn't attend, and I haven't been through all of it yet, but I'm kind of making my way when I have time through it. And I just, you know, the thing that I guess is so hard to get out to people to understand, because it's hard for me to understand, and I've spent my life in science and medicine, but, you know, radiation, it's silent, it's invisible. So it doesn't, when it enters your body, it doesn't say, hey, something's going on. And it's a long-term chronic condition and eventually a killer. I mean, it's, and somehow we have to get that message out about radiation.
Well, I think, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I just think that somehow we're not reaching people. And I think that you know, there's a lot of business interests and a lot of money going into, I think, keeping us from reaching people like we should in this country. I mean, the Fukushima disaster, it's far from over. And it's really very frightening that the Unit 4 is gradually, and this came out in the Caldecott Symposium, but it's gradually sinking, and that entire structure is very likely to collapse. And there's, you know, it's like, it's hard again to imagine. There's like 1,500 spent nuclear fuel rods that have over 37 million curies of deadly radiation. And it would, if this collapses and this is released, it really would make much of the world completely uninhabitable. I mean, it's kind of hard, it almost seems like sci-fi, you know, it's kind of hard to understand this and comprehend it. But there are folks like Helen Caldecott and others that have spent their lives, their academic, scientific, and medical lives studying this, and so the science is there. And so I think there's a lot of alarm in with a lot of us that if that reactor truly sinks and there's an explosion or a fire another big earthquake or some other natural disaster there. Apparently they're having little earthquakes all the time. Japan has more earthquakes than anybody else in the world. And so if they should have another one and that structure continues to collapse, I mean, it would be a catastrophic meltdown.
Well, I want to ask you a couple questions related to what I learned in this symposium. I'm one of those rare individuals who I got interested in atomic power when I was very, very young. For my 8th birthday, I was given a book on nuclear power, and of course it was a science book for children. But I got very intrigued by it, very intrigued at subatomic particles, and I've been reading about this ever since. And when the Three Mile Island incident came along, I immersed myself. I was able to take very close notes and recorded the Three Mile Island hearings. And since I was in college at the time, I thought it was important that people, again, get exposed to the actual information, not merely the propaganda. So I called the NRC and asked them to send a health physicist to come and lecture at the college. And, of course, they begged off. They said, well, we have public relations people for that. And I said, well, I understand that, and I understand that that's the typical reaction. But what I had hoped to accomplish, I said, was, you know, since we those of us who work in the sciences know that very rarely does good scientific information come unimpeded through the press. So I said, here was a chance. We want to have a HP come out and talk. And long story short, that we actually did get a health physicist who not only, it turned out, worked at the Turkey Point plant in South Dade, but he also was the senior NRC health physicist at Three Mile Island. So he has a lot of very interesting things to say. And so I bring some small expertise to this this challenge. But one of the things I want to mention to you was, in addition to that great comment that we're all health physicists now, was a comment that one of the investigators, her name escapes me right now, she mentioned that increasingly every time there's an incident, what the nuclear regulatory industry tends to do is either A, stop monitoring, which is what I understand they did off the coast of California, or B, raise up the amount of exposure that people can have.
Right, and like they did
that
in
doesn't
Japan,
sound like
right?
science. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said like they did in Japan right after the incident, they raised it up to a level of 20 and then immediately lowered it down. But a lot of kids especially were exposed at that higher level, saying that was safe. But anyway, I'm sorry, I kind of interrupted
you. No, that's okay. That's okay. I'm happy when you react like that, sure. Another point that they made, which, again, I've never heard anyone make, but, of course, is so clear and obvious if you think about it, they said those magical radius circles that are drawn around nuclear plants, that in fact, in the real world, winds do not stop at 10 miles, nor do they radiate in an equal measure in all directions, so that then when you start thinking about prevailing winds, it really provides a much different picture of exposure. Another point that was made that I thought was terribly, terribly shocking was they were saying that in the context of exposure, when not only was there a much greater level of exposure, but when people are living subsistence or they're living off the sea, and you've got increasing levels of radioactive water leaking into the sea, there is no real membrane between the plants at Fukushima and the Pacific. Here you've got people who've been living off the sea, both fish and seaweed. This is going to be bioaccumulating.
Absolutely.
Because it, you know. And the other point that they made about the bioaccumulation is, you know, we tend to think about, if people think about it at all, well, you know, there's that, oh, it's just similar to your annual ambient body exposure to radiation. But what the point they made was that exposure inside, when you ingest radioactive material, is very, very different than external body radiation.
All excellent points, and absolutely right. And I think things that, I mean, the information has been out there for a long time, but again, it's just not getting to people the way it should, I don't believe. I'm not sure what the answer is, except a total campaign in our country. I mean, I think the leadership needs to come from the top. I think during the I've heard this a couple times, that what we need is like a Marshall plan, you know, like a for energy in this country, for safe energy in this country, a Marshall Plan like they did in Europe during the war, after the war. I don't know. Nobody knows when it's going to be irreversible. I mean, some of the damage that's being done to our bodies and the planet. You know, there is no safe. I mean, another thing I think we need to continue to hammer
home
is there is no safe level of radiation exposure. So even background, I mean, the beauty of our bodies are we can repair a lot of things that happen to us. So some of that background radiation exposure and probably an X-ray or so, or, you know, we can repair some of that. Our DNA has the ability to do that. But after it continues to accumulate and accumulate and accumulate, it can't repair it anymore. And that's what leads to cancer. And, you know, cancer takes maybe 5 to 70 years. And people are asking me now, you know, it seems that we're having, you know, we have a cancer epidemic. Almost everyone you talk to, somebody has cancer. Well, it's hard to really link that to anything specific, but, you know, this is when we'd see it. You know, look at the nuclear testing that was done back in the 50s, the 40s, 50s, 60s, and some of these other things, and these nuclear Chernobyl, and now Fukushima, and Three Mile, and some of the other accidents that have happened that weren't meltdowns, but radiation releases, and plants normally release radiation. And so these things are cumulative over time, and I think, personally, I think, and some other doctors that I work with think that that's contributing to this increase in cancer that we're seeing.
Absolutely. There's a story from, I think it comes out of Canada, Yahoo News, that's referring to a study from Radiation and Public Health Project found that babies born in Western United States, as well as other Pacific countries shortly after Fukushima, may be at greater risk for congenital hyperthyroidism.
That's right.
And it talks about babies born in places like Hawaii, Alaska, California, Oregon, Washington. And, you know, although there were some immediate monitoring right after the event, this monitoring has all but disappeared. Another point that you made during your last comment was very important, and I think it's very little understood, that while there's this, you know, so much standard background radiation is perfectly tolerable, the point that one of the other speakers made was that while that's true in the most general of senses, that's based on studies that were done of healthy 20-year-old men soldiers marched through an area briefly for a brief exposure period. It was not extended. It wasn't elderly people or young people. And they said that there's actually a sex bias in radiation damage, that women and children, for a variety of reasons, tend to be more affected by radiation than men seem to be.
Absolutely. And you know, that standard man, that has been many organizations, including PSR, have fought to change that. And the standard man is a 70-kilogram, 30-year-old white male in excellent health. And so that's what they say is the safe dose for that standard person. And, you know, that's not the safe dose. I mean, there is no safe dose, but... And women are, they have just some recent studies have found that women are more susceptible to radiation exposure and the cancers, and children, and especially fetuses, babies in utero, whose cells are just rapidly turning over, like thousands and thousands of cellular turnovers. I mean, these babies' DNA is really being exposed to radiation. And, you know, the results are devastating. Congenital malformations, and we're seeing more of that now in Chernobyl. I mean, the pictures are just frightening of what's going on over there. Learning disabilities, mental retardation, microcephaly, small heads that don't develop as well. I mean, all these things happen to babies in utero and young children. So, you know, and what's you know, obviously from PSR's standpoint, we don't need nuclear power plants. We don't need nuclear bombs. We don't need nuclear radiation. So we need to shut all this down.
One of the other things that I thought was just terribly devastating information, I think it was a Dr. Yablonsky from the Russian Academy who was talking about the fact that when Europe has been compiling data on genetic anomalies, they were totally ignoring Russia and the Ukraine, and were only compiling their data in Europe. And it was only recently through extensive lobbying that they began to include that information. And then further, that one of the things that you don't typically consider, and obviously is just terrible, is the fact that the folks who live near the Chernobyl plant are by and large agriculture-based. And here they are. The soil is not taking up the radiation. There's no clay in it, so it comes right into the plants. They're eating potatoes, and they're using the plant refuse to burn for their fires.
Right.
So and it keeps accumulating and accumulating and accumulating, so they're breathing the smoke that's got radiation in it. They're eating the plants that have radiation in it, which is just increasingly accumulating in the soil, and it's not going away. So that plus alcohol's impact on genetics, it's just wreaking a terrible, terrible impact there.
It absolutely is. And, I mean, we're seeing some of the same thing in Fukushima, but Fukushima's not that old yet. But,
right.
I mean, just looking at, they did a study, I think it was last year, that looked at about a little under 40,000 kids, and, you know, 35% of them had thyroid cysts or nodules. You don't normally find that in children. And, you know, will these go on to become cancer of the thyroid? You know, many of them probably will. And other cancers, and that's just you know, a few years after Fukushima.
They can't scrub the soil. That's impossible. And
you can't filter
out
the ocean. You can't
that's
filter
for sure.
the ocean, right?
And I'm sure you've heard, as I have, to great dismay, that there's exacerbated by corruption. A lot of the cleanup is not really actual cleanup. It's just moving the pile from point A to point B, and worse, putting radioactive material in the rivers to expand the contaminated material and area.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what's so frightening. You know, the misinformation, the outright lies, and I know you've watched the Caldecott Symposium, the two folks from Japan that spoke. I mean, you know, there was obviously things that weren't told right, whether they were outright lies or just people just didn't know at the time. But I just think now we need to get this information out honestly to people. I'm not sure who can do it. I'm not, you know, I don't know.
Well, you know, unfortunately, the economic power, which controls so much of mass media in this country and the world, is all behind the nuclear power industry. Is supported by the nuclear power industry. And then I think when you add that, plus the fact that a lot of people live their lives in an almost science-free zone. They leave science to experts. They leave medicine to experts. They don't take any responsibility for understanding the world that they live in.
You're right.
And that kind of mentality is not good in the long run, that's for sure.
Well, you know, and you don't want to, you know, scare people too much, but I tell you, it really is scary. When I listen to these, you know, I've not been doing this many years compared to, you know, Dr. Caldecott's been doing it for 40 years.
Uh-huh.
Many of the folks that spoke there have spent their lives studying this, and I mean, they're really frightened about what's going to happen if we don't, you know, get this right. You know, and you don't hear people talking about it. I mean, I think a Marshall Plan would be great. You know, President Obama talked about mapping the brain. You know, we went to the moon on a decade challenge. We mapped the human genome. Now he wants to map the human brain, which I think is wonderful. But what about, you know, let's do a Marshall Plan for safe energy in this country. I'm just not hearing enough about the other forms of safe energy, you know, wind, solar, wave action, things like this. We're not hearing it, you know, enough of it at least. So we have lots to do in this country, and you know, we have a lot of the same reactors in our country. The Mark I GE reactor that was U.S. built, that was
right.
Fukushima Daiichi. So we have, I think, 22 or 24 plants in the U.S. that have this Mark I reactor, and these are old. A lot of our reactors in this country are 40 years or older. So something very likely could happen here.
Well, Dr. Ringenberg, you know, one of the things that, and I say this with the blackest of humor, one of the phrases that our media falls back on over and over is no imminent threat.
Yeah.
There's no imminent threat. So the leaking of those Hanford storage areas although it's going to leak into the Columbia River, there's no imminent threat. No one's going to fall over dead tomorrow. And I know when I was promoting and trying to get the stories out about Three Mile Island and about the dangers in our local reactors here, the question I kept getting asked by news directors was, well, is anyone going to die tomorrow? And I said, that is so not the right question.
Absolutely.
That is not the right question.
So naive. Well, and some did die immediately. I mean, obviously,
yeah.
Some of those workers in Fukushima are dead.
Yeah.
But, it's a legacy we're leaving. And, which brings me back to Crystal River. I mean, so they've closed down the Crystal River nuclear plant. That's wonderful. And now they have all that spent nuclear fuel sitting over there in cooling ponds. And so what is Duke going to do? They're going to leave it there for 60 years to cool off. 60 years, okay? They'll all be dead, right? And then they're going to leave it to the kids today that are, 10, whatever. It's just mind-boggling to me. This stuff needs to be put in, PSR recommends, as do many, into hardened, construction sites, concrete hardened, there's a word for it, I'm blocking on it right now, Hoff.
Sure, sure.
They're just going to let it sit there. And that's the other thing that's really frightening is all the nuclear waste that we have. And this stuff really is susceptible. I mean, to fire, to an accident. We have, and I'm just going to look it up here because I had to look it up, a startling fact that we have approximately 72,000 tons still stored of nuclear waste, highly reactive. This stuff isn't, and that's the other thing that's, I guess, hard for folks to comprehend is, once it's used in the reactor and it moves out to these cooling ponds, it doesn't lose its reactivity, and it stays reactive for hundreds of thousands of years. It doesn't turn off in 60 years, And so 75% of all the spent fuel in this country is sitting poorly protected, highly vulnerable to a terrorist, to a fire, to something else, a severe natural disaster, Hurricane Andrew. And all these cooling pools are at full capacity. And so we really need to look at our nuclear waste in this country, not just from nuclear power plants, but from some of the arms, like Hanford.
Sure. Well, one of the questions that I kept asking to everyone, I thought both at the FPNL as well as the NRC that I spoke to, was how is this viable economically when you haven't yet solved the waste dilemma? And it only needs to be cared for, what's the half-life, 30,000 years?
Since we haven't
managed a cultural civilization that lasted more than a few hundred, how can you promise me anything about 5,000, 10,000, or 20,000 years, much less 30 or 50? It's just not economically viable. And without the insurance that the public underwrites and this incredible, ludicrous plan the state of Florida has accepted, that we can pay for these plants whether they build them or not? How would you like to be paid to be a doctor whether you practice or not? I think that's a grand idea.
I would love it.
To the future?
And I don't have to give back the $100 million or $150 million
that you gave me?
I would love
that's
it.
Right.
But why are we hearing people ought to be, they ought to be streaming to Tallahassee, banging on doors and banging on their legislatures' doors. And, they're just not. They're paying the money. I guess then the flip side is, what's the alternative? I mean, if we shut them all down tomorrow, we can't do that. But we can gradually phase them out and we have the technology now to the wind and solar and maybe efficiency, 38%?
Yeah.
Being inefficient,
You mentioned a Marshall Plan. Why can't we have some of and just take FPNL for example, $14 billion in profit, and they can't invest in a Marshall Plan of solution to get rid of nuclear waste or to deal with it successfully?
There's
no money in that industry to invest in that solution. They're basically drop that stinking, dangerous radiation refuse on our doorstep.
I know, yeah. It's amazing. Well, I just think we're all going to, like you said, I mean, we're all just going to have to continue the fight, but all of us have to. I think if, you know, it can't just be a Helen Caldicott or a few here and there. I think the country, the grassroots, the people of this country are going to have to demand change. I mean, we can do it, but I think that, again, folks are kind of afraid of it maybe or don't understand it, or so somehow we have to make it understandable to everybody that this really isn't safe. It's not green either. You know, it's not green. It's not safe.
No.
Nuclear power plants.
Well, just to give you an idea of what I ran into when I wanted to simply invite an HP to come to our college to speak, the first thing that they asked me was, okay, you want an HP. Give us your name, phone number, social security number, the company you work at, your employer's home number. They strictly tried to intimidate me into not making a simple request of having a scientist come out and speak.
I know. Isn't.
And unfortunately for them, or fortunately for the college community, I toughed it out, gave them the information, didn't worry about what fragments of privacy we still have, and I asked. And the other thing was, FPNL, to try to balance, I guess, the terrible truth of the HP coming to the college, they invited my class to come to the plant and get a tour. And the person who they sent around with us, you know, to give us the information about the plant, he made a statement right at the beginning. He said, you know, all these green environmentalist types, they try to scare you about nuclear power. He said, well, I'll tell you right now, you could eat a cube of plutonium and you'd never feel a thing.
Oh, yeah, right. Go right ahead. We'll watch you. Go right ahead. The other thing that is kind of, it's all linked together, but, you know, when you look at climate change and you know, that's going to influence a lot of what happens to some of these nuclear power plants. It was just, I think, a few years back that 9 U.S. and 7 Canadian nuclear power plants had to go off the grid because of the heat was triggering so much overuse of electricity, and they couldn't keep up the cooling of, you know, of everything that they had to do. Anyway, they had to go off the grid. And as, you know, as climate change worsens, I think we're going to see that more often, and nuclear power plants on rivers with diminishing water. I mean, these things are all kind of tied in together.
So, you know, looking 5 years and 10 years down the road, when Japan is largely quarantined, you know, you have to wonder, what is it that's going to happen for people to take notice? For them to take the time out of their lives and say, we have to put an end to this. Can you guess what that milestone is? What that terrible,
Boy,
terrible milestone is?
I hate to even think about it. I mean, for the world, it has to happen to the world. I thought Fukushima was enough, but, you know, for the U.S., we're going to have a similar, you know, whether it's Turkey Point or New York, our own disaster, although we've had a couple mild ones. I don't know. I really don't.
Well, we can be sure there won't be journalists allowed to fly over.
No, I don't know. And, you know, there, I kind of lost my train of thought what I was going to say, but the one other thing that PSR did, and I don't have the reference right in front of me, but they looked at over the last 10 years from 2001 to 2011, and they looked at all the wind power that's in the U.S. already, and there is quite a bit of wind power, but that right now it's producing as much electricity as 7 nuclear power plants.
No kidding.
Each that has 2 reactors, so that's, you know, 14 reactors, and these wind turbines are producing enough electricity. So, I mean, I think it's there, but I think there are those that don't want it to happen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There are those that don't want solar and wind to be successful and be our primary form of electricity.
Well, solar power might just end up being too cheap to meter, like the old slogan used to say, huh?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, Dr. Ringenberg, thank you so much for coming on. And anytime you'd like to come on and chat about these matters, honestly, if I did nothing but a show on nuclear power, it wouldn't be enough. So please help us get people informed.
Or find people a little more knowledgeable than even I am. And while I have
fine.
You quickly, if I could just mention, I also would like, I think, a topic on fracking that's going on in Florida that's being proposed in Monroe, Dade, and Collier counties. And there's a bill before the legislators in Tallahassee. Needs to be talked about. And I could send you some info if you'd like to read through it.
Please do.
Because I just found out about it myself, and the bill is bad, and I can connect you with a journalist that you might want to talk with.
Certainly. I guess there's not enough threats to our water supply yet, huh?
Pardon me?
I said I guess there's just not enough threats to our water supply
yet. There just isn't. You know, so now they want to frack. You know, I just... Jeez. so I have your email, right? Yeah, just send it to that
sure
one.
Do.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
That'd be great. Thank you again, Doctor. I really appreciate your work.
Well, thank you
and
so much.
And come back
for having
again,
me on.
Okay?
You betcha. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Dr. Lynn Ringenberg of the Physicians for Social Reusability giving us an update and her thoughts on the ongoing nuclear disaster, which... despite the phrase, no imminent threat, is in fact a real threat to your life, my life, your grandchildren's life, their grandchildren's life, and their grandchildren's life. So if you can visualize that, then you need to be part of the struggle to clean up the nuclear industry. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again. This is News Director Richard Spisak of Progressive News Network. I urge you to support the other aggressive journalists out there. Emily Dillick and her Progressive News. Susan Nylon, her Nylon Report. Miss Gwendolyn Holden-Berry with her There Be Monsters. Our friend Brian Stetton with his Progress Toward Democracy. Anita Stewart and her Wise Women. Harriet Thurman with her Voice of the People. So make sure you tune in. And also Sita Bagul up in the Brevard area. So thanks so much for tuning in. Rick Spisak, News Director of Progressive News Network. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.